Welcome to Good Life. I'm Dean Wilson. I'm so glad you're with us wherever you are. If you're joining us on television here in Santa Barbara, California area, we welcome you. And so many of you are joining us all around the world on all these different platforms. There's so many now, and the social media, the YouTube channel, there's a podcast. You can search Good Life Conversations and you can listen to all the interviews, long form interviews. If you go to the YouTube channel and subscribe, you can see the long form interviews and what we call power clips, where we kind of break those up into some of the great moments. And the reason we're here is to dwell on the good stuff, to talk to great people who are doing great things. We don't call it good life because we don't acknowledge suffering or difficulty. This is planet Earth, and we're well aware of the struggle and the suffering that so many people go through. But we are still dwelling on the good stuff. And even in those stories of suffering, we've found amazing stories of redemption and overcoming and selflessness and service. And it's been amazing. I got to tell you, we've been sitting here for 4 years taping shows, and just one after another, the guests have just been such an encouragement and an inspiration. So we're thankful to be here. We're thankful you're here, wherever you're joining us. It's so great to get your notes. If you've send us one, if you haven't, I love getting your notes, whether it's on Twitter or an email or somewhere else. We love hearing from you, where you are, and kind of about your life. We'll get phone calls in our office sometimes. Somebody who has a story they want to tell, we love that too. So reach out. We'd love to hear from you. As always, Good Life is brought to you by Bunnen Chevrolet. We're so grateful for our friends Leo Bunnen and the whole team down there. So thank you for joining us. And I'm so excited. It's not every day you get a guest on this couch who's played at Wimbledon, but we have one today. And I have not
played at Wimbledon. Maybe in the future. There's still hope for you.
I think that ship has sailed. Yeah. I did have a mean backhand at one point.
There you go. Slice, it looks like, from what you were showing me there.
You already diagnosed it.
Yeah, well, that's what I do, I guess. Yeah.
Kind of a tennis legend in Santa Barbara, California. Mark Basham is with me, and Mark did play, was a heck of a player, and then has gone on to coach. He's coached at a place dear to our heart around here, my alma mater, Westmont College, which is just 3 miles up the road here. And so Mark's coached there, and they had some great success. Mark just recently retired from that, but he 14 years as a coach at the college level. Let's go back to the beginning, kind of where you grew up, and tell us a little bit about your life.
Sure. Grew up right here in Santa Barbara, 1962. I have a twin sister. We were born at St. Francis Hospital, and we were born 2 months early, so we had a 50% chance of not living, and so that's where it started. Wow. My mom, who is not a Christian, unfortunately, but she said, you know, back then she would go to the prayer chapel there at the hospital and would pray that we would live, because we literally were a 50% chance back then in 1962 of living. So we were in an incubator for 2 months.
Wow.
And then we fortunately both lived, and I grew up here in Santa Barbara, Montecito Union, Santa Barbara Junior High, Santa Barbara High School, and then down to UCLA, was there and graduated in 1986, and then played a little pro tennis after that, and been back here ever since.
Wow. Well, what did sports do for you? How did that impact your life? I mean, you did it, and a lot of us have done it, but not at the highest level. And you did it at the highest level. That was a journey for you. What was the influence, kind of impact of sports on your life?
Yeah, I certainly learned a lot about myself. I learned about having to handle pressure. It certainly gave me just a perspective, I think, in life. And My twin sister, who is very, very academic, went to Stanford and Stanford Business School. So she really had more the academic abilities. And my parents kept me back in kindergarten. My sister went bursting forward to first grade when we had to go back to kindergarten. And so I think it gave me confidence. I was a little guy always. And so tennis could, because I was relatively quick and was well taught and had some, I was left-handed, so that helped. So it gave me, I think it was a sport that I could play and gain confidence in. But I think most of all, to answer your question, it just helped me learn more about myself and really also about just the world. I got to travel a lot with tennis, and so that was certainly a fun part of it as well.
Yeah. We had a former professional basketball player who's coaching the NBA, and he was here a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about sports. And we were talking about kind of that toughness that comes when you have to dig deep, especially after when you fail.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I think that's a pretty important lesson for life, isn't it?
A huge lesson in life. And in tennis, only one person wins each tournament. So
right. A lot of losers.
The odds of winning a tournament, whether it be singles or doubles, are unless you're a top seeded player, a top player, you're going to likely lose. So you get used to losing and then having to bounce back up and see if you can do it the next week. And so that certainly was something that I, of course, experienced quite a bit.
Yeah, and that you talk about confidence. I've got two high school football players right now in our household, junior and freshman. And so they're both right now, of course, season's starting. And so they both come home from practice every day. And I talk to them both every day. And it's just amazing to me to see that, 2 days ago, my junior was up, my freshman was down. They'll kind of give me the hand signal about practice. Yesterday, the junior was down and the freshman was up. And it was, he's got back pain, and so he couldn't tackle, and his coach screamed at him. And then the day before, my freshman, his confidence was down from a scrimmage they had. He's the quarterback, and he threw an interception, And so I find it so fascinating because I'm here now then when they get home kind of coaching them up.
Yeah.
But I like both, the good days and the bad days, because I got to have a really big talk with my freshman 2 days ago about confidence. I said, Luke, even if it goes wrong, you've got what it takes. You've got it.
Yeah.
You have to believe that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if you got to go to the next play, and you got to believe I got what it takes for the next play. Forget about that one. And as I was saying that, I'm like, this is like life, isn't it?
No doubt about it. In a nutshell, I agree with you.
We fail.
Yeah. Yep.
When we fail, do we think we still got it? Do we think we got what it takes to do the next deal, or not?
I know.
That's a profound thing.
It is.
And sports really drives home, which I love. And you probably got your fair share of this in coaching.
No question about it. At Westmont, for men's tennis anyway, we won during my 14 years, a little over 50% of the time. And this last season, I was very excited to have been a part of. We went out on a good note, but we were 10-10. We finished second in our conference. Most of our losses were to Division II and Division III schools. And we got to the finals of the conference tournament. The guys fought super hard. We easily could have lost in the semifinals of our conference tournament in Arizona. And the guys dug deep and were passionate. And we got a few breaks, and we were stoked to be in the finals, but we were 10-10.
Right.
And so, very, very, very humbled. Really, I think throughout my life, I've been humbled, whether it be through the ups and downs in academics, tennis, whatever it be.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so coaching furthered that. Yeah.
I think sometimes especially if we protect our kids, I think it can lead to a surprise when you get out in life and you fail so much, And if anybody who does it, the great thing about doing nothing is you could do it perfectly.
Yeah. Right?
But when you're a baseball player, if you get a hit 3 times out of 10, you're a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. You're the best that's ever lived. 3 out of 10. You got to get kind of good at failing in one sense.
Yep. Yep.
Talk to me about the other thing I love about sports, team. The dynamic of the team.
Yep.
What kind of culture did you instill, and how did you instill it in terms of these men loving each other, working together, cheering each other on?
Yeah, I think I was, had an advantage at Westmont because of the culture that was created by past coaches like Chris Elwood or just all the legendary coaches that had been there and are still there. John Moore, who was the Westmont basketball coach, Kirsten Moore, no relation, who's still our women's basketball coach, and on and on and on. So seeing the work that they've done over the years, and being a Christian college, and since I've been a Christian now for 32 years, it just was a good fit for me. So we certainly tried to put Christ at the center, and we would pray at the start of every practice. We'd pray before matches, after matches, and we would talk about the Lord, and the guys would do some Bible studies together and things like that. And so it was certainly that was Christ was at the front, and so therefore we needed to and myself as head coach needed to make sure I was orchestrating our culture around that and making sure that their values seemed to be in line, that they were doing a good job in the classroom, and that they were supporting one another on and off the court, and just watching watching their conduct and things along those lines.
So faith really was a central part
for
of
sure.
the culture.
Yeah.
That's so good. So let's talk about just your experience at Wimbledon mm-hmm. or at the U.S. Open mm-hmm. or these like top level venues, tournaments, you know, in that world.
Yeah.
What was that like? I mean, when you're walking out,
yeah.
How do you navigate that?
Yeah, I feel like I got a taste of it. I was out there for 2.5 years, and so I was happy that I was able to make it from the lower level of bottom ten of pro tennis up to, you could say, getting into the dance in the doubles at Wimbledon, U.S. Open, and French Open. So it was great having the opportunity. Wimbledon in particular, I got to play with Luke Jensen. He and his brother Murphy played at USC and ended up winning the French Open maybe 5 years after he and I played.
Okay.
And so we lost it. We lost in a tough four-set match in the first round, which it would have been awesome to get through that. And then at the U.S. Open, I played with Charles Beckman, who I'd played with for 2.5 years on the Pro Tour, and he served for the match for us to win, and we both of us just kind of choked a little bit in that game and lost it, then lost in a tiebreaker to two Brazilians. So basically felt like I got into the dance to some degree, but didn't get to dance for as long as I wanted to or who I wanted to maybe. And college, I think, was probably more rewarding, being at UCLA in terms of we were national champions too out of my 4 years, and that was certainly really wonderful. And then we finished in the finals my senior year. But my junior year in particular, I think, was really rewarding. We beat Pepperdine 5-3 in the semifinals, came down to our match at number one doubles, which I was a part of. And then in the finals against Stanford, it came down to our match at number one doubles, where the whole third set was riding on our match. So, and we got down a break 4-3 in the third set, and we somehow were able to turn that around. And my partner hit a totally clutch, amazing forehand return on match point at 4-5 in the third for us to win the national championship. So that would have been my highlight in tennis. But Wimbledon, and you know, my wife, who's a doctor here in town, she often tells people, oh yeah, well, my husband played at Wimbledon and this and that. But for me, that was more humbling. Or you know, I would have loved to have done better on the pro tour.
Would have
loved to have had a higher ranking or been out there longer, things like that.
You must be pretty competitive.
Sure, of course. I think anybody that does fairly well in sports, you played baseball, I know, at Westmont, and so I'm sure you're very competitive as well. So I think it comes with the territory.
Played baseball at Westmont's kind of a loose term. My dad's sitting over here laughing, so that's fine. I was pretty good in high school.
There you go.
College, not so much. But
I had to be competitive, because things didn't come. You know, I'm not a big guy. I wasn't overpowering my opponents. I think players that are really gifted and gifted also with genetic height and strength, speed, whatever, and skill. That's, you know, I didn't have as much of the size and natural power. I had to be competitive.
Fierce.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another great thing about sports, that fierce kind of competitiveness. And if you can balance it with humility and kindness, you're not just a complete jerk.
Yeah.
You know, they could go too far.
I
think it's a powerful thing, you know. Talk about kind of your next chapter. Like, as you think about, you know, you've retired from coaching, you're obviously done playing, you've got, you know, a new season you're looking at. What excites you?
Yeah, what excites me is a little bit the unknown, because it is a bit uncharted for me. I am getting, I'm getting a hip replacement, believe it or not.
Oh, are you really?
Age 61, a lot of hardcore tennis, so that's something I'm not really looking forward to, but that's this coming Wednesday. But after I recover from that, I still want to stay involved in tennis in some capacity, because it's been so much the center of my life. But then my faith, you know, is more important thing, because that really, I would say, more what defines me and what life's about. So I want to try to continue to integrate that. I have been involved as a home group leader for many years at Santa Barbara Community Church. I did some volunteer work for a number of years at the Santa Barbara Rescue Mission, which was very rewarding. I like teaching and coaching, kind of, you know, mentoring and psychology, things like that. So I want to still stay in, you know, try to find that passion, you know, I think it will be in the area of my faith, and tennis will probably still be somewhat part of it.
I forgot to ask you about, in terms of your pro experience, I forgot, were you ever around any of like the legends?
I was definitely. Boris Becker was close to, saw Boris Becker, was right around there. Stefan Edberg, kind of you name it. Jimmy Connors, who lives in Montecito, used to live in San Ynez, got to play with Jimmy, fortunately, maybe 50 plus times.
Really?
Rod Laver, some say, is one of the best of all time. He lived in Solvang for 5 years. A number of us juniors got to play with him as well. I was 17 or 18 when I got to hit with Rod Laver. But anyway, to answer your question, yes, there, when I was out there in the late 80s, there were a lot of great players. Connors was just close to phasing out. Ivan Lendl, Boris Becker was coming in. Pete Sampras was just starting. So Andre Agassi was even a little bit getting into this, just starting as well. So it was a little bit of a changing in the guard, but there's a lot of talent out there that I got to see from more of a distance, really.
Yeah.
So to speak.
Some of those matches that I've watched, the Sampras, especially like Sampras and Agassi.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, McEnroe and Connors back. Yeah. You know, but then. What an amazing sport to watch when you can watch it like that at the highest level, when you've got two fierce competitors equally matched that are just, you know, these long, I mean, just there's nothing like it, really.
Exactly. And with Agassi and Sampras, you had a great returner, one of the best ever in Agassi, and the best serve and volleyer possibly of all time in Sampras. So different game styles for sure, somewhat contrasting, as you had with Borg and McEnroe, same kind of deal. And they had a huge rivalry for 4 or 5 years.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right, Borg. Wow.
Yeah.
Again, never played much tennis, but love watching. So is pickleball going to take over the world?
it seems that it might. I agree with you. It's taking over Santa Barbara, and it seems to be zooming ahead of tennis, which has always been a solid, popular sport. But pickleball has a lot of life to it right now, no question about it, a lot of power. And we'll see if it continues to grow.
Yeah.
You're seeing it now on TV for the first time in the last 6 months.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it could. It's a lot of fun. It's very social, easier on the body than tennis, less moving, and people are loving it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lastly, I wanted to get into as you look back on your 32 years in this faith journey.
Yeah.
You know, what has that meant, I guess, for you? How has it been something that you can lean on, what has it meant to you?
So at the highest part of who I am, the most important thing would just be that I feel it's what life is about now and forever. I hope to be, with the Lord for eternity and after, my earthly body is done.
Yeah.
And basically I think it gives me a perspective for life in terms of what is this all about? Whether it's my relationship with my wife, whether it was coaching at Westmont, whether it was mentoring at the Rescue Mission, and what is it, so it gives me a perspective to not take myself too seriously, to realize that my life is very, very short, and at the end of the day it's really not about me. It's really about serving a higher power, which I believe is Jesus and Christ, and living for that. And so not looking, it's easy to be selfish. It's easy to try to give ourselves the glory then to realize, no, that I'm getting, that I have to remind myself that to not be deceived and to keep remembering, what I've learned, what I believe in my heart. And so I've been fortunate, I think, to be part of Santa Barbara Community Church for 30 years. The Jolly Brothers, Reed and Steve, who you probably know, started that church many, many years ago. There's been a transition over the last few years, but it's up there on Sinaguitas, off of Foothill. It's been a wonderful church for me. I've enjoyed homebrew. Groups. And so, and really, in terms of my friends and who I identify with,
it's community,
as you know, probably as well or better than I do, how important that is.
It's so important.
Yeah. So I'd say, really, it's everything. My father died not a Christian. My mother's shouldn't probably say her age, but she's getting up there, and I've shared with her a lot over the years, and she I think might believe in God but isn't church going, and so it was really something that I didn't come from a church background, so it was something that God was patient with me, and I just felt a little bit of a calling even when I was a kid, but I didn't accept it. I prayed some growing up to God, and I prayed, and I bought a Bible my freshman year at UCLA. I had a roommate that my freshman year who was a Christian, and that kind of got me moving a little bit closer. I did some Bible studies, but then it just took more time, and God was patient, and I even dated a gal who had graduated from Westmont after I got off the Pro Tour. We dated for a few years. That got me even closer, and then it was really seeing my stepfather dying of cancer, and it made me, and I was, I remember I was at church, and I kind of thought to myself that I either need to really commit fully 100% or not, and quit being in this no man's land, which is, you could say, a tennis term, is a place you don't want to be in tennis.
Right. Right.
You don't want to be in no man's land. You certainly don't want to be there, I think, in life. And even as I was a half-hearted Christian, I wasn't a committed Christian yet. And so it was neat. I felt that in church. I felt, had that feeling in church, kind of an epiphany.
Wow. So seeing your stepfather dying was a part of kind of saying, okay, is this real or not?
Yep. Digging into life and just seeing that made me think deeper, and because it opened up, I think, my emotions further, and my mother, I think, kind of experienced that as well when she lost her husband, her final husband that she'd been married to. 25 years ago, she really then started. I started taking her to churches, and so she was. It seemed vulnerable, or and potentially amenable or open to the faith, but it hasn't happened yet. It didn't happen then, but fortunately it happened for me.
That's a powerful experience. It's an interesting thing that happens with death, in my view, and limited experience with this, but it almost can prompt the question, I think, at the deepest levels of who we are, is this all there is? I mean, you know what I'm saying?
I 100% know what you're saying. I saw my dad die at age 70. I saw my mother's sister die at age 57. I saw my dad's brother die in his 60s. I've lost all my grandparents, and you know, on and on and on. Good, very good friend of mine from Westmont. We were in a home group together. He died at 31 in a car crash. So I've seen, yeah. I mean, so it makes you think long and hard. Yeah, no question.
That's
it's a real eye opener.
Yeah, I kind of think, I know, I think C.S. Lewis wrote something about this, but the taste, like all the good stuff that we taste here is like 0.00001% of what's to come.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything bad here is not part of what's to come.
Yeah.
Which I think, I'm getting chills talking about that.
Yeah.
That's an amazing thing, isn't it?
And I want to even, have, you know, even be able to feel that even, I feel it for sure. And I look forward to someday being in heaven and to experience that at the utmost level. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think it's super powerful.
It's this contrast thing of like, you know, the Bible talks about it. Our bodies, I mean, we're dust.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Like this thing,
yeah,
is not doing all that well right now, but it, you know, pretty much from when we're born, we're going downhill at some level. Like this thing is going to fall off. This will be dust.
Yeah.
And so there's that, but then there's the truth that we're this miraculous, precious, made in the image of God, soul, spirit. That goes on.
It's going to rise. It's going to rise above. I know. I know.
I watched a memorial service yesterday. Mm. Tim Keller. Do you know
Yeah,
Tim?
Of course.
Yeah.
What an amazing person he was. And I loved some of his books, The Meaning of Marriage and Reason for God. And amazing person. I wish I'd gotten to meet him and know him. Yeah.
Amazing guy.
I know.
And so his memorial service, St. Patrick's Cathedral, New York City, packed out, you know.
Mm.
And there was such joy among, especially the sons that spoke and his wife. His wife was hilarious. And I was watching this going, okay, these people, like they're grieving. You know, Tim Keller's body fell off. But they were saying Tim Keller today is more alive than he has ever been.
Praise God.
In his life.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what if we believe that?
Yeah.
Like, you know, I mean, we're all, I know, nobody likes a diagnosis. We've all had diagnoses. It's part of this earthly thing. But my goodness, if we believe that, Tim Keller, who, you know, however long ago was alive on earth, walking around, body fell off, and he's more alive than he's ever been. That is life-changing, just that truth.
Yep. You know? I think the truth and the freedom that it gives us here on
fearlessness.
Earth. Fearlessness. And if you have that in athletics, if you have that in athletics at a much more superficial level, to be free to compete and to play, but most of all to have it in life and to know that there's something far greater out there after, what a blessing that we're able to have with that with that belief. Yeah.
Powerful. Well,
very
we're
powerful.
Out of time. That went quickly. It's great to meet you.
Yeah, honor to meet you. Thank you. Appreciate
thank
all
you
you're doing.
On.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank
Mark
you.
Mark Basham, everybody. What a great guy. Appreciate you joining us. We'll see you next time.